Can you tell us more about Ajahn Chah's background himself, where he came from and who, where he got his training? Because he seems like an extraordinary human being.
Yes, exceptional. His monastery is actually quite close to his home village. It's about 3-4 kilometers away. So he was born in rural northeast Thailand, Ubon province, and is from a comfortable family, but you know, it was comfortable in the sense of out in the countryside, and in those days, life in the northeast of Thailand was kind of beyond basic. It's very simple. Northeast of Thailand is considered the poorest part of Thailand, and the last to be developed, really. And so that when Ajahn Chah was growing up, it was very remote, and so that he, growing up, schools were only just starting to be instituted, like public education was only just starting to be instituted. And so he managed to get 1 year of grade one of public schooling, and then in his second year the teacher disappeared somehow, and that was as far as his formal education went. Say the monasteries have always been a place of education, and so that he was drawn from the time he was quite young. He says he remembers as a young boy, 5-6 years older, something like that, quite young, and playing games. But the games that he wanted to play were him being a monk and sitting on a platform and giving precepts to he was interested in playing at. And so that, he'd be in his, in northeast of Thailand, they have this sort of wrap that it's a multi-purpose wrap that all of the people have, and it's sort of, usually it's like around the waist, and you use it for all sorts of things. But anyway, he'd have it over his shoulder bare, and so he was drawn from an early age, and then he relates the time when he was about 9 years old, and you're in a big family, in a farming village you've got duties from the time you're very little, and one of the duties that he just really resented was having to go out and water the tobacco plants, because it didn't make any sense to him. He wasn't getting anything from these. It was the adults who were getting the benefit from this, and it was just a chore. And then he was down, his sister relates a time when they were underneath the house, because everything's up on pillars, on stilts, and the underneath is where various things happen, you've got a loom under there usually, and sometimes some of the animals, and that's definitely where your rice pounder is, and he was supposed to be helping his sister with pounding this rice, and something slipped, and it came, and he wasn't paying attention, And anyway, it slipped and hurt him, hit him and hurt him. And he said, "That's it. I'm going to the monastery." And he packed his meager belongings and went to the monastery. And that was, he was done with the worldly life. So, but, you know, then you get to be about 17, 18. And so he'd been a novice all that time. He lived as a temple boy for a little while, and then became a novice and did his studies began his religious studies, and got, I don't know, maybe one or two grades of religious studies in. And then the pull of the world as a teenager too much, so he left and then, but after a couple of years, I'm sort of like this really I'm kind of disillusioned, disenchanted with the world, and came back. He ordained as a monk when he was 20, which is that's when you can first ordain as a, up until then you have to be as a novice. So he ordained when he was 20, and then continued in his home village and nearby monasteries that were study places. And he continued his studies and learning and teaching others. And he continued to progress in his studies, and he was. So over, and then he started hearing about different, like forest masters, in the northeast of Thailand. He remembers his father going to actually to like where Wat Pa Pong is now, was a forest, and Ajahn Sao. He was Ajahn Mun's teacher, his father coming back from offering food to Ajahn Sao and listening to Dhamma. Ajahn Sao had been a walking Tudong, the Ubon is a hotbed of many of the great teachers, forest masters. They might not have lived there and taught there, but a lot of them grew up there, and that's where they started. So Ajahn Sao was one of those, so he was that made an impression on his mind that these forest monks are special in some way, so then he started. He continued his studies, and he was about to do his first, like almost like a graduate degree, first degree in Pali studies. He was ready to take the exam, and that's when his father got ill and looked like he was on his deathbed. So he left his studies, didn't take the exams, and come back to be with his father and his family, and then his father passed away, and that was a catalyst for him to just that reflection on death, and just this comes for all of us, and so then he started looking for teachers, forest masters, where he could train with, and he did. Go live with one in just over the into the region of central Thailand. He spent some time there, but that's where he heard of Ajahn Mun. So then he came back to the northeast and then went and spent a short time with Ajahn Mun, because in those days, in order to actually live with Ajahn Mun, you would need to, like, retake your ordination, Because there are two different sects in Thailand, and Ajahn Mun belonged to one, Ajahn Chah belonged to the other, and he was very inspired by Ajahn Mun, and it's very interesting because Ajahn Chah was inspired many of his doubts really faded away at that point and had a clear kind of vision of direction. And he asked Ajahn Mun, should he disrobe and reordain in order to live close to him? And Ajahn Mun's response was, no. Mahanikaya is the name of the sect that Ajahn Chah belonged to. He said, Mahanikaya needs good monks also. So it's really prescient, because Ajahn Chah really was a catalyst for many, many, many monks as a reform movement a bit, or reinvigorating the tradition of practice and monastic discipline. So it's a bit